The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
We absolutely support Israel's right to defend itself in line with international law.
We need to safeguard financial stability.
2024 is not going to be an easy year.
We used to call it the dream of home ownership, but look at Britain now.
We've got to hang on to optimism and hope because it is the biggest driver of change.
Let's stop thinking of life in terms of Brexit. Let's move on and look to the future.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Lizzie Burden.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. So it's the final countdown in Budget Week. Just a couple of days to go before the excitement of the statement from the Chancellor on Wednesday. The Chancellor has set the tone for this week. Prudent and responsible. That's what he wants to be thought of, or how he wants to frame this particular set of tax and spending decisions. The ever prudent and responsible Lizzie Burden has been looking at the decisions that he has to make. She's laughing at me.
Well, I like it. It's very true, in fact. But prudent and responsible is a huge change from the tone by the Chancellor at the start of the year. You'll remember that Mail on Sunday cover that said Hunt promised tax cuts would spark a Lawson boom. Now he seems to be making more of a plea to the bond market to have confidence in his fiscal responsibility, and a bit of a side-eye to the Tory backbenchers clamouring for tax cuts in an election year.
Look, there's also a political reality to this as well. The latest poll out from the Evening Standard and Ipsos this morning showing the Tories in the Evening Standard's headline hitting rock bottom, with support at a record low of just 20%, Labour at 47%. This frames the electoral challenge that Jeremy Hunt has on Wednesday as well. He needs to try and please voters if the Tories aren't going to end up with a result close to this poll.
But you have to ask how much electoral gain there is to be had from tax cuts. The autumn statement was all about tax cuts, business and personal tax cuts, and it barely budged the polls, which is perhaps unsurprising, given people still feel poorer because the tax take has in reality increased.
So there's a question here of also having people essentially giving people something, giving voters something to vote for the Conservative Party on the back of, keeping business happy, trying to stimulate the UK equity markets, we'll get onto that later as well, keep the rest of the markets happy that you're not doing something irresponsible, and sending loads of good vibes.
So many things he needs to achieve with so little headroom, and such a big worry about adding to inflation. It's already still 2 times the Bank of England's target. 4% is where we are currently.
And the other question we'll be looking out for answers for, and we'll get into this more later in the week as well, is, you know, the Chancellor produced the rabbit out of the hat in the autumn statement with the cut to national insurance. Has he got another rabbit in that hat? How big is the hat? Who will wear the hat at the end of this? Many questions that we hope to answer for you over the next couple of days.
Well, let's discuss with our guest, David Gawk. He is now head of public policy at London-based law firm McFarlane's, but in his previous life as a Conservative MP, he held various roles at the Treasury, and he was also Secretary of State for Work and Pensions. David, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So the Chancellor, as we say, David, needs to thread a really tiny needle on tax. We're in an election year, but he's got limited headroom. Inflation is still 4%. Is it even responsible to be talking about tax cuts now?
I'm not sure it is, to be honest. When you look at the state of the public finances, we've got a relatively loose fiscal rule with debt falling in the fifth year, but it can go up in the 4 years before that. When you look at the spending plans, which don't look easily deliverable, certainly not less you're prepared to sort of flesh out some quite tough policies. I think in normal circumstances, if you were stepping back and we didn't have an election this year, you really wouldn't be thinking that this was a year for big tax cuts.
Well, assuming that the Chancellor is going to cut taxes, we hear it's a toss-up between a further cut to national insurance or 2p off income tax. If you were in his position, what would be your preference?
I think a cut in national insurance is economically the better policy. It's better directed at people in work. You get more of a reduction than you would. You get more for your money, if you like, with national insurance than you do with income tax, because it's a narrower base. So I think, you know, going for NI is the right call economically. It's of course what the Chancellor did back in November. There is an argument that people are more focused on the income tax rate than they are on the NI rate. But I think if you want to have some kind of economic argument to back it up, and I think they should, better to go with NI.
Well, the rumour is that the Prime Minister would prefer to cut income tax because it's more of a headline grabber. Do you think politically that's the right analysis?
That might well be right. And look, in recent years, that's what governments have tended to do. They've focused more on income tax and allowed NI to increase as more of a stealth tax, if you like. And there are quite a lot of voters who are going to go around and say, oh, well, you know, more on NI, that's good for my state pension, it's good for the NHS. Of course, the reality is they're both taxes on income. National insurance has got a narrower base, you know, isn't paid by pensioners, isn't paid on rental income, etc., etc. So if your focus is getting more people into work, then I think you should go with NI, as I say. But the headline rate, people are probably do know what the rate of income tax is they pay. They probably don't know the rate of NI that they pay.
Is this, do you think, going to be a budget solely focused on personal taxes? Have we heard the last of incentives for businesses, which of course is very much the focus of the autumn statement?
Yes, because the autumn statement was very focused on full expensing. And to be fair to the government in the autumn, I'm not sure they had room for the tax cuts that they announced. But the tax cuts that they announced actually were pretty good ones. Yeah, they were the right things to do if you can afford to do it. Whether there's something else to follow here, he's done full expensing. I assume they're not going to return to the rate of corporation tax, having already put that up. You know, whether they'll look to, you know, stamp duty on shares, there might be something there that they think that might be sort of helpful. Whether there's some kind of incentives to encourage more investment in British companies, that's possible. But my guess is that to the extent that they've got any wriggle room, slightly question whether they have got it, but the extent that they've got it, it does look as if it will be the more sort of politically potent personal tax cuts rather than something directed at businesses. But we'll find out on Wednesday.
On that question of how much room they have, I mean, the Chancellor already hit the record low of the fiscal headroom, the space to have to be able to spend on tax or public spending. How low, you were Minister of the Treasury for many years, how low can that go, that figure, do you think? Because, you know, that's also something that markets are very interested in when it comes to looking at the financial health of the UK.
We are making a mistake to think that these fiscal rules are sort of turned into a target and that you almost have to land it on a sixpence. The point of the fiscal rules is to indicate a sense of responsibility and a determination to get the public finances on a sustainable footing. And the difficulty is that if we're always, if you like, gaming the system and trying to get as close as possible to the limits of those fiscal rules, they're not going to be as effective as they should be. I'm a believer in fiscal rules. I think we need fiscal rules. As say, if anything, I think the current fiscal rules are too loose. But when people complain about, oh, it's OBR judgments that are influencing and restricting what the Chancellor is doing, the OBR's sort of judgments on specific measures only matter as much as they do because we are so close to the limits. And if we weren't close to the limits, then the OBR comes along and says, oh, actually, this is going to be £2 billion more expensive, or there's a slight deterioration in the forecast of something that, debt interest payments are going to be a little bit higher. And the whole budget is sort of thrown out of kilter. That's only because we are cutting it so fine.
I suppose the flip side to that argument is that the fiscal rules are holding back growth. We have heard from the former chief economist at the Bank of England, Andy Haldane, saying exactly that on this podcast. And lots of economists and business figures saying that actually we're kind of swirling the plug hole when it comes to growth. And what we really need is a bit of ambition to stimulate growth.
I think I'd make a couple of points sort of in response to that. First of all, if the argument is that we should be investing more, that we should be doing more on skills, infrastructure, whatever it might be, I think that's a perfectly good argument. But therefore, what we need to do is be prepared to make the difficult decisions about cutting spending in other areas or raising taxes. And trying to say, well, we'll borrow our way out of this to deliver growth, I think is difficult. And that leads me to the sort of second issue, which is, at the moment, we are forecast essentially to have debt flatlining for the next few years. The next few years where we don't anticipate a big recession or another pandemic or a war or any of the things that we know happen from time to time that results in our debt deteriorating. And it seems to me in those relatively good years, we should be bringing debt down. And then when we have those difficult years, we can allow debt to go up as a response. And I think there is a bit of a problem with what the sustainability of our public finances. Demography is going to make that harder in the years ahead. And just sort of pretending that there isn't a problem with, our debt to GDP ratio having gone up a lot and no sign of it coming down.
But are you then, with your years of experience in the Treasury and the Department of Work and Pensions, looking on with horror at the numbers heading into this budget?
Well, I think there are some really worrying numbers. I mean, we are not unique here, and there are other countries that have got a higher debt to GDP ratio than we have. The US is borrowing a heck of a lot more money than we are. Germany's got its growth problems and so on. So that we're not unique, but I think we always have to be conscious that the UK should never allow itself to become an outlier here and find ourselves in a worse position than most other countries, because then the markets can be pretty merciless, and we saw what happened with Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. And I think we are going to have to, whoever's in government is going to have to face up to the fact that there are good things we would like to do. There might be taxes that would be good to cut, and there might be spending that would be good to increase. But we're ultimately going to have to pay for it. And, I think some fiscal rules and a sense of prudence and responsibility are still necessary, even though it would be good if politicians were prepared to make some brave decisions and ensure that our tax system was less growth damaging than it is, and that public spending was more growth delivering than it is.
Well, prudence and responsibility were very much the watchwords from the Chancellor in his broadcast round this weekend, but no one's forgetting back in January the headline on the Mail on Sunday saying that tax cuts will spark a new Lawson boom. Did he totally mismanage expectations there?
Yes, I think so. I don't precisely know what was going on and who was briefing what and so on. But I thought at the time that was a very dangerous thing to do. And of course, when Nigel Lawson cut taxes, he did so at a time when the public finances were very strong, and the budget was still in surplus, even after the big tax cuts announced in 1988. And we're not in those circumstances. And to be fair, if you look back at the history of the sort of Thatcher government, particularly in the early years, taxes went up because that was what was needed at the time. And I think sort of setting expectations, I don't know whether there was, Jeremy Hunt felt he was under some kind of political pressure internally. But, if you, as I say, if you step back and look at what the numbers show at the moment, if there wasn't a general election later this year, this would not be a tax cutting budget. This would be one which was still focused on credibility, responsibility, prudence. We'll see what happens. It may be the numbers are much better than we all think at the moment, but that doesn't quite look to be where we are.
One of the ways that we hear that Jeremy Hunt may try to raise some money is to close the non-dom tax loophole for people who have earnings coming from overseas as well. Should we judge the Chancellor harshly for clearly stealing Labour's political clothes on this one?
Well, I'm not altogether surprised that Jeremy Hunt has gone there. And I've thought for some time that either he would try to go some of the way to addressing this policy and Labour's attack on the government on that. Essentially either by reducing the scope of it or by producing evidence that in fact it's not going to raise anything like the money that Labour claims. For a long time I think the Treasury has just sort of ignored the issues, so I'm not altogether surprised that they've done that. I was involved last time round that this area was reformed. It's a very complex area. There are quite a lot of trade-offs here. There are some risks in terms of what the behavioural response will be. And if you're doing a sort of more fundamental reform of this particular area, I think you certainly want to take your time and get a sort of sense of what is likely to happen. I think politics here is playing a really important part. They don't want to have this as a dividing line with the Labour Party at the next general election. Obviously, there is a sort of personal element as well with the Prime Minister's wife. Mm. So, you can see why politically they're tempted to do that. And yes, they'll be accused of a U-turn, but that probably won't be a big issue by the time we come to the general election.
Do you think the reality is that in order to keep attracting the non-doms, it will come back under another name?
I mean, I can't see that we would get to the situation. I think it would be a mistake to get to the situation where you essentially scrap the whole thing altogether and don't offer something for highly mobile individuals to encourage them to be located in the UK. Now, we can have a debate about for how long and precisely what nature of the regime should be, and what incentives there should be to encourage investment in the UK from those individuals. It's a pretty complex area, but the fact is that one of the reasons why the City of London, for example, has been successful is that we have been very open to international talent, and I think there are risks if you were to approach this without a degree of caution and a recognition that we want to remain competitive, because there are other places where people can move to. I'm not suggesting that everyone will up sticks if there's any change here. The evidence doesn't suggest it will be quite as dramatic as that. But people do have choices, and it's not so much the people leaving, it's about people not coming in future. And I think that's where you need to really think very carefully through all the details of any policy in this area.
David, a quick thought. We had a lot of speculation around what the rabbit out of the hat was going to be last autumn. Any thoughts on what the Chancellor could have in his hat or up his sleeve to surprise us all on Wednesday?
No, I'm of course the nature of them is that they're supposed to be sort of unexpected.
Oh, but you have insider insight, I'm sure.
No, I'm afraid I don't have any insider insight here as to what the rabbit might be. Look, I mean, if they do go ahead with a 2 pence reduction in the NI rate, that is going to be, you know, where all their firepower is going to be used, and it's hard to see that there'll be much scope for anything else. It just to sort of maybe potentially sort of change the narrative a little bit, you know, whether they will announce some additional funding for the NHS. You know, that is a political vulnerability for the government. Mm. So that's a sort of slightly, you know, I'm not seeing much sort of speculation on that, but you know, politically, I think that might be a sort of reasonably smart move.
A curveball on public spending. We'll watch out for that. David Gawke, Head of Public Policy at McFarland's. Thank you for joining us.
Well, alongside tax giveaways, Jeremy Hunt is also coming under increasing pressure to find a way to revitalise the UK stock market in the budget. One solution he could be warming to is the British ISA. This would be changing the way the tax-free savings account works to direct more money into UK equities, something that a number of investors have been petitioning the Chancellor for a while, including the Business Growth Fund, which is one of the signatories to an open letter on the subject recently. Earlier, Caroline Hepker and I spoke to Paul Stevens, who's head of quoted investments at the fund, and asked him why he thinks the UK stock market needs this boost.
The size of the valuation discount has become very large now, and the cause of that isn't because these businesses are at 40% less attractive than overseas ones. It's because there are structural reasons why we've seen outflows of capital from UK equities. That's the policy changes at pension funds, it's policy changes at wealth management organisations, which have been consolidating pretty rapidly over the last 5 to 10 years. And it's these sorts of market forces which have resulted in what's increasingly becoming a bit of a market failure at the smaller end of the listed markets, which needs to be addressed because equity markets matter. They're important to the productivity and economic growth prospects of a particular country.
In terms of what you make of Hunt's sort of broader plan, a whole number of other steps that the government has taken is to try to revive the capital market in the UK. There are reports also of the NatWest share sale happening perhaps soon. How much do you think that Hunt is really moving the dial, moving the needle on investing into the UK, on the capital markets in Britain?
The government, Treasury, constrained from what it can do with in terms of tax reliefs and other ways of kind of incentivizing investment. And so I guess the signatories to this particular letter that you alluded to at the beginning addresses this because it's a bold way of reinvigorating investment into smaller and growing UK-based businesses in a way that doesn't cost the Treasury anymore, potentially, because if you're not increasing the ISA allowance and perhaps just switching all of the, you know, requirement for ISA allowance each year to go into UK companies, that doesn't cost the Treasury anymore, but it does stimulate investment into those domestic-based businesses.
Are you in favour of just making all of the ISA allowance focused on UK stocks? Because that's the flip side. You know, if you want to follow in the footpath of, let's say, Australia with its very strong stock market, you know, largely thanks to a huge pensions industry that invests in Aussie stocks. If you want that in the UK, why not just have all individual savings accounts focused on UK stocks?
I think that's the sort of bold action that we need. It's, you know, similar to the approach that's used in Japan. It's similar to what the French have. It's similar to what the Italians have. They have a 70% requirement in their savings scheme. So I think it's, you know, it's time for bold action because the outlook for the UK capital markets is severely challenged and has been for a number of years.
That was Paul Stevens, head of quoted investments at the Business Growth Fund, speaking to Caroline Hepker and I a little bit earlier on Bloomberg Radio.
Our UK business reporter Sabar Meddings joined us now for more on this story. Why are Sabar retail investors, small investors, so in focus for Jeremy Hunt on Wednesday?
Well, think about all the thousands of retail investors across the UK who may invest money into an ISA. Obviously, there are several types of ISA, but one in particular is being sort of looked at in stocks and shares. At the moment, you can have £20,000 tax-free savings and you can invest that into the stock market. Now, some of this, quite a lot of it, may potentially be in international shares. So that could be US companies. And one idea is that we target at least some of this, or potentially all of it, into the UK, which for obvious reasons, I mean, we can look at every week, there appears to be a story about an undervalued company which is receiving interest from perhaps a private equity firm or an international buyer. So there's a lot of need. The obvious, it's very obvious why we need to direct money into UK companies, and the retail investors are seen as a potential lucrative way of helping to fix the problem.
Because this is sort of an alternative to chasing the big pension funds or the big institutional investors. I suppose the other question I'd had about this is, do we have that much money, frankly? Do retail investors actually have enough money to be able to make a big difference when it comes to London markets?
Well, I mean, there is still sort of untapped savings that could be invested into the stock market, but that's assuming people want to invest their money. You know, they may feel better keeping it in property or in their bank as cash. But I mean, 28.8 billion was pulled by professional investors in UK equity funds last year. So the problem is really, really obvious. And I guess the other point that you may look at is, you know, valuations are low. There are very few new companies coming to the market, and specifically not in the UK. So they've got to do something to try and give a bit of buoyancy to the UK market to make it an attractive place for companies, some UK international, to come and list here. So sort of getting retail investors more sort of enthusiastic about investing in the UK may be one way of doing that.
So this is a carrot being dangled potentially to get retail investors to choose the UK. What other measures on investing could we be expecting, carrot or stick?
Well, another potential carrot could be the stamp duty on trading. That's currently 0.5%. The idea would be that, you know, that would promote growth, get more people, particularly from international investors, to invest in the UK. But the other point on that you may think is that sort of a bit of a city giveaway, you know, sort of a giveaway to city when perhaps they should be thinking about elsewhere. So I'm not sure on that one. I don't know if it will come up, but it could be a little bit divisive.
Because it's part of the political calculation that goes into the budget as well. And we were having this conversation just a little bit earlier with David Gook, talking about the idea of, you know, there's so much focus now on the personal tax cuts. You know, is there an expectation there could be measures around businesses, you know, that even with the risk of that criticism that the Chancellor could be focusing too much on the City of London?
I mean, I think on that political point, I think it's at the point where it's a political risk not to be focused on the City of London. And if you think about what Labour's also said about sort of revitalising the city, they seem to be pretty aligned on kind of what they're saying. There doesn't seem to be any disagreements. So I do feel like, given what we've seen with all these companies going to list in New York, whether it's CRH, whether it's Flutter, there really does need to be something done in the UK to encourage people to stay here and also come and list here as well.
I know that there's a difference between stocks and businesses, shall we say, but do you think that optically there's a difference between measures that benefit the city, quote unquote, and businesses? For example, this 360 mil that we expect to be given to manufacturing, whether or not that's from the government or elsewhere.
Well, I mean, I guess manufacturing, it's clearly an sort of a hot topic in the UK. What are we doing to support our manufacturers? People are having a difficult time exporting, and clearly a lot of the manufacturers are not based in London. So there's jobs, all of that probably quite popular for with them sort of across the UK, not just the city.
Okay, Sabah Meddings, our UK business reporter, thanks very much for joining us. Your big plans for Budget Day? What are you going to be doing?
Oh, I'll be tucked up with my desk lunch, watching furiously blogging, I'm sure.
Have a shot of Pret OJ exactly. Every time he says prudence.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to reading your analysis on Wednesday's budget as well. Sabah, thanks so much for coming into us in the studio. Lizzie, this is the really interesting part, because we've had the Chancellor set the tone. We've heard about some of the concern from David Gook. This is the crunch moment for the Chancellor to decide on what exactly is going to get into that final set of announcements.
Yeah, this could be his last opportunity to woo voters before the election. We may not even have time for an autumn statement before the public goes to the polls.
Well, that is it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by Tiwa Adebayo, and our audio engineers were Sean Guastamacchia and Marifa Hussain. I'm Lizzie Burden.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.